Hello and welcome to our pre-presentation podcast. This month we are going to be talking about opioid use disorder, a big topic. And for that we have both Andrea Peterson and Alex Stalmakov who are going to be doing this presentation. Hello Andrea and Alex, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me as well.
I would like to do a quick run of introduction, so let's go with alphabetical. Alex.
Yeah, I'm Alex Stalmakov. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I work in the addiction services building, so I offer dual psychiatric and addiction care. I completed my addiction medicine fellowship through the University of Iowa School of Medicine. I did that last year, actually, and upon completing fellowship, started at CentraCare to do both psychiatry and addiction. So I've been doing a lot with MOUD and different addictions, but also psychiatry.
Great. Andrea.
My name's Andrea Peterson. I'm also a psychiatric nurse practitioner at St. Cloud Hospital. I work in the empath unit and emergency psychiatry, also consultation psychiatry on medical floors. So I was primarily hired for psychiatry. However, I have some passion with substance use disorder and addiction and opiate use disorder from experience in the emergency room and on the medical floors. So this is an exciting topic for me to bring to everyone else.
Great. Thank you. With that, why don't we talk about what we are going to be presenting in Science of Practice in Medicine and why is that important?
So opioid use disorder obviously comes with their stigma and bringing education to providers so they're more comfortable with prescribing and treating opioid use disorders in primary care clinic, in the hospital setting, wherever you're at. Obviously, we have a lot of tools such as Suboxone, so I'd like to provide some education on yes. how to start those medications so providers are comfortable managing opioid use disorders in any setting they work in.
Okay.
Whether you're family practice or psychiatry, pediatric, we want everyone, maternal OBGYNs, to be able to prescribe medications for this population.
Anything to add, Alex?
Yeah, there's just a few things. We're going to specifically have a slide or two on kind of unique substances that have come up, such as xylazine. I'll discuss specifically kratom. Kratom, if you're not familiar, it actually functions like heroin. So it's been a big problem in our clinic. You can actually get it at the dispensary down the road from us. So it's been a big deal. Specifically with Suboxone, as we see it coming into the ER, whether people are post-overdose and needing it for withdrawal or if they've been on it and they're using fentanyl. I think there's a hesitance to start it because people don't really know a lot about it. So it's almost like a scary medicine sometimes to other doctors. So I really just want to demystify and we'll specifically go into how do you start the Suboxone? You know, what is a macro induction? How do you prevent worsening withdrawal? Those key aspects as well.
Now that brings me to the first specific question. We just released a podcast with Dr. Abrams about buprenorphine for chronic pain and what a potentially game changer it is.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between Suboxone, which has buprenorphine, and naloxone? How do they act differently and why the indications are somewhat different?
Yeah, so they're not really different. The way that the administration occurs is different in theory. So buprenorphine is the medication. That's the main medication we're talking about in Suboxone. Suboxone is a combination of buprenorphine and naloxone, whereas Subutex is going to be just buprenorphine alone. Actually, buprenorphine was the original medication that was created originally for chronic pain. It wasn't until we started using it for opioid use disorder that we had stipulations added that we needed to create this combination product with naloxone. That being because if people were to misuse the drug, so if they were to dissolve it and inject it, naloxone would then get activated because naloxone isn't going to do anything if you swallow it. It's like a big placebo. Only if you inject it does it get activated. So that's supposed to, in theory, prevent someone from really getting a high, quote unquote, from the Suboxone. But it doesn't do anything to the medicine. It's not what creates withdrawal. The buprenorphine alone is what creates withdrawal if people have used fentanyl. So I just want to be clear that between the products, they don't really make a difference. It's just kind of this idea of safety that's more theoretical.
It's a step down from other opioids into a partial agonist, right? Buprenorphine?
Yeah, partial agonist. And it has a strong affinity to the opioid receptors. So your overdose risk is going to be more with your full agonist, like methadone, Vicodin, oxycodone, fentanyl, than your partial agonist.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question that I'm curious about. It's a two-part question, and Andrea, you can start with this one. First is the fun part, right, if you will. What happens if somebody is chronically on opioids? Let's say they're not with heroin, they're just using oral opioids, they're very used to it, and they get forced to withdraw. They run out of medication and end up in a forest. Can you give me the spectrum of the reaction that they will have with the potential severe complications?
So if someone is like forced to withdraw, like they ran out of their prescription, they run on it long term and prescribers aren't comfortable prescribing it anymore, they'll have symptoms like nausea, diarrhea, goosebumps, a lot of flu-like symptoms. They may feel like they're actually dying. Usually it's not lethal, their withdrawals, but they're severe. It can cause people to have suicidal thoughts. That's probably why I started seeing a lot of addiction in the hospital. So it increases your suicide risk. Now, Suboxone or buprenorphine, that's something we can help treat their withdrawal with.
Okay. Now, Alex, then the next question I had following this is, if you could give me a ballpark idea, we want to get somebody to step down from full opioid to buprenorphine or Suboxone and then hopefully come off the opioid if they don't need it for any other reason. What's the typical, in an ideal scenario, timeline for that?
Yeah, that completely depends on the full mu agonist they had, meaning if it's an oxycodone, Dilaudid, probably the easiest because that's got a short half-life. So really within 12 hours, we could start up the Suboxone. I wouldn't be worried about it. Now, fentanyl is going to be messy. I really hate tramadol because of the serotonergic pieces of that. So if it's fentanyl, usually I'm going to give it like 48 hours, 36, but you're being risky if you don't commit to a high dose of Suboxone. But really in general, short acting, 8 to 12 hours you could start. Long acting, it's going to be the 2 to 3 days that you start.
And how long would you expect them to remain on Suboxone?
What are we using it for?
For, let's say, somebody who we want to transition, you know, we found that the chronic pain is really not there. It was more of that they became used to the drug and we want to get them off the medication.
Okay, if we're getting into opioid use disorder territory, studies, and these are case reports, and then they've looked retrospectively as well as how do people do on Suboxone depending on how long they're on it. Mm-hmm. We found people do best if they're on it for at least a year, sometimes 2 years. They found if people are stopped before then, we see a really high increased rate of returning to use or other, you know, negative outcomes. That's just a rough estimate. I like to tell my patients all the time, you scan your brain, it's not a rubber band. It takes the brain about a year for that neurochemical activity to look normal, quote unquote, like the brain that was not addicted. So take some time.
So we are doing the habituation more than the addiction part, would you say? Or there's a component of addiction ongoing?
I would say if they got into trouble with their pain meds, we're probably getting into addiction territory. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, it's a two-part issue because they have physiologic dependence. So, and actually they're developing a hyperanalgesic response from the full mu agonist. So Suboxone will stabilize that, address the physiologic dependence or the need so they don't withdraw, but then also it'll treat the addiction component.
Okay. Andrea, what other medications are we going to be talking about?
Oh, so we'll also talk about naltrexone, which doesn't have as good as evidence as buprenorphine, but is also something we use. I also like that with the alcohol use disorder population. So maybe some co-occurring disorders. We'll also talk about a little bit about methadone as treatment, and we'll talk about the different formulations, preparations of Suboxone, buprenorphine, because there's different stuff that has come out the last couple of years, including Sublocade and Brixadi. So we have injectable forms of buprenorphine.
So it looks like there are more options and little details about to go with every option. So can you at this point give me a rough idea of who should come off the hands of the primary provider and go to you?
Sure. I mean, that kind of comes down to the primary care provider's comfort. Sometimes if they're just not sure of how to get someone started on Suboxone, we will be the people when a patient's in active withdrawal or an active crisis, we'll get them onto the medicine, we'll stabilize them. Mm-hmm. And then if it's a matter of continuing it, then family medicine could certainly take it on. Right. If, I mean, sometimes they're not comfortable with Suboxone at all, we'll see them. Or I've had a few patients that we had family meds start them on Suboxone, continue them, but then they wanted to bridge to Sublocade. They weren't sure how to do that. So I've taken those patients. Or if they just have complicated co-occurring things going on, other substance use, then maybe you want to get addiction involved. One example, I have a lady with severe liver. She has cirrhosis, actually. And so there's a question of, if she wants to do Sublocade, can we do it? So if we're getting into comorbidities and then switching formulations of Suboxone, I would say you can defer to us specialists.
Okay. How about for all the other medications? Is it more of a hard line that they shouldn't be managed by primaries or not?
So naltrexone, I think, managed by primaries easily. It's pretty easy to manage that medication. Now, methadone has to be in opiate use disorder clinic that does that couldn't be managed by primary care for opiate use disorder.
Do you in your team have people who focus on the psychiatric comorbidities associated, if they are, which quite often they are?
In the addiction clinic, that would be me, because I'm the psychiatric nurse practitioner. My colleagues are family medicine. So I do absolutely focus on it. And sometimes my patients actually have more mental health concerns than addiction, but they do need to have an addiction component to come and see me and use the addiction services. But absolutely, I always practice with a dual lens. I think it's important we're treating both. That's what evidence shows helps people get better.
What is your success rate, would you say? How many patients graduate from your clinic and after how long, would you say?
Well, I started with addiction services not quite a year ago. So I haven't had the benefit of seeing that quite yet, because at minimum we see a year or two.
Sure.
But I have seen people, to me, if they're getting to 3-month visits, that's a huge success. And I've had a handful get to that extent. Sometimes I see people just temporarily while they're in our treatment program. And so then when they graduate treatment program, then they graduate me. And so I've had a good, I'd say maybe a quarter do that. I will say, because my population is dual psychiatry, I have people who come in psychotic, or I've had patients who are manic, and they tend to stick with me and don't necessarily graduate. But I would say for straight Suboxone, they do wonderfully, like almost at least 50% of the time, unless they have horrible social situations. It's like when you put a wilted flower in water, it just all of a sudden they bloom and everything changes.
I would say that too, Alex, from the acute care setting. I was a little afraid to start Suboxone when I first started off on this adventure, and it's been rewarding. And you see patients, you start them on Suboxone, they get immediately feel better. They want to go to work again. They're not preoccupied by cravings all day long. They go back to being functional people and able to manage their addiction much better.
You do mostly inpatient, correct, Andrea?
Yeah, I do mostly inpatient. I used to do some outpatient, but it's mostly, so I'm from the inpatient lens and Alex is from the outpatient lens.
Can you tell me about the inpatient? Where is the building located and what capabilities you have?
So St. Cloud Hospital, I worked out in the emergency room setting, also the empath unit, which is a mental health observation setting on the sixth floor. We treat opioid use disorder. Also, we're usually seeing co-occurring disorders because we're a mental health treatment facility.
Sure.
There's not a specific place in the hospital for opioid use disorders. They're kind of all over the hospital, treated on the medical floors, treated on empath, treated on mental health in the ER. We go to wherever the patient is.
And these are these services, the ones you're speaking about, are only in the St. Cloud Hospital for CentraCare, correct? Or does Rice Hospital offer something very similar in the psychiatric unit?
We're based out of St. Cloud Hospital, but we can see patients all over CentraCare, telehealth. So we can see them virtually and kind of guide the medical providers on starting Suboxone.
And you, this is for inpatient you're talking about?
Yes,
okay.
Inpatient.
So that leads me to the last question. Perhaps, Alex, this is more for you. Who they should they refer to, and where do you offer services for outpatient for addiction and psychiatry in your case?
Oh, yeah, that would be CentraCare Addiction Services. We're located in the Midsota building in St. Cloud. So that's where all of our addiction services live. And to be clear, not just for medication needs, but we have a PHP in an IOP program here as well. They're welcome to email me or Kurt Devine or Erica Burgraff. Sure. I know Dr. Devine has gone into that. We do go to the ED sometimes if something is really messy. I myself was in the ED. I think that was last week. So I know that they know of our names. You can mm-hmm. even Epic message us.
Sure. How about, isn't there an addiction clinic in Wilmer as well?
My understanding is Dr. Abrams had a little bit of a practice. Is that his practice mm-hmm. that was in Wilmer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So if he has spots, then that, I was aware of that as well, yes.
Okay. But you offer telehealth services as well throughout the system? Or e-consults, telehealth or e-consult?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, we just rolled out a project, it's still in process, with our OB department so they can curbside us, whether it's informal or create a formal consult for unclear UA results in pregnant people, or mm-hmm. if they just have a complicated case, and then that might turn into a referral for addiction services. So we absolutely want to be the specialist available to any department if they want to utilize us.
Great. Looking forward to the presentation in August, and thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.